Good evening. Bob Woodward releases tape showing Trump knew coronavirus was deadly as early as February. The president says he didn't want to panic anyone. And the mystery of a car that rammed Black Lives Matter protesters last week deepens. With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with the news for Wednesday, September 9th, 2020. And British drug maker AstraZeneca has put on hold studies of its COVID-19 vaccine candidate in the United States and other countries. The company says it's investigating the illness of a British volunteer as either a side effect of the vaccine or just a coincidence. Scientists have been developing a vaccine against the coronavirus since the outbreak began. The United States has launched the world's largest studies with 30,000 test subjects. The Food and Drug Administration already has told manufacturers it won't consider any vaccine that's less than 50% effective. President Trump has said he expects a vaccine before Election Day, but experts say that's incredibly unlikely. Final testing of two other vaccines is continuing, one created by the National Institutes of Health and manufactured by Moderna Incorporated, the other made by Pfizer and Germany's BioNTech. Several vaccine candidates made by Chinese companies are in late stages of testing in various countries, and health authorities are skeptical about a vaccine announced by Russia. Meanwhile, researchers in Cuba are working on a vaccine candidate with a list of international partners. That's called Sovereign 01 Vaccine. Last month, Cuban doctors began clinical trials. Cuba is the only country in Latin America that's gotten authorization to conduct clinical trials of a domestically produced vaccine. The Cuban government has promised all its citizens will have free access to the COVID-19 vaccine through the country's public health system. In Brazil, Army General Carlos Cidreau, who is in command of the Army Intelligence Center, died from COVID-19 on Tuesday morning. He's been hospitalized for 10 days at the Armed Forces Hospital in Brasilia. His death comes as local press leaked a United Nations document stating the administration of Brazil's president, Jair Bolsonaro, has violated legal obligations during the pandemic. The United Nations report claims Brazil's government failed to take precautions and denied the seriousness of the disease. As of Wednesday morning, Brazil had acknowledged nearly 4.2 million COVID-19 cases and 128,000 deaths. In a book titled Rage, set to be released next week, Washington Post columnist Bob Woodward reports on 18 hours of interviews he's conducted with President Trump on a wide range of subjects, including coronavirus and race. In the interviews, Trump admits he played down the coronavirus early on so as not to panic Americans. On March 19th, Trump had this to say.
Well, I think, Bob, really, to be honest with you,
sure, I want you to.
I wanted to always play it down. I still like playing it down.
Yes,
because I don't want to create a panic.
In a February 7th interview, President Trump described a call to Woodward of a discussion he had with the president of China, admitting he deliberately minimized the danger of the coronavirus. Trump says he knew at that time it was deadly stuff.
And so what was President Xi saying yesterday?
Well, we were talking mostly about the virus, and I think he's going to have it in good shape, but, you know, it's a very tricky situation. It's
it goes
through air, Bob. That's always tougher than the touch. You know, the touch, you don't have to touch things, right? But the air, you just breathe the air, and that's how it's passed. And so that's a very tricky one. That's a very delicate one. It's also more deadly than your strenuous flus. You know, people don't realize we lose 25,000, 30,000 people a year here. Who would ever think that, right?
I know.
It's pretty amazing. And then I say, well, is that the same thing? This is more deadly. This is 5% versus 1% and less than 1%. You know, so this is deadly stuff.
President Trump and tapes made of interviews with Bob Woodward. The book Rage is due out on September 15th. It joins other tell-all books about Trump that are on the New York Times bestseller list, including Stephanie Wolkoff's book on Melania Trump and Michael Cohen's account of his role as Trump's fixer. I've been reading Donald Trump versus the United States, Inside the Struggle to Stop a President by New York Times reporter Michael Schmidt. Trump's admission that he lied to the American public about the coronavirus and that the United States public had nothing to fear is in direct violation to numerous statements that Trump made over the last few months playing down the virus and saying it was nothing to fear. The Washington Post came up with a list of 31 of those lies. Here's a few.
Words about a pandemic at this point?
No, we're not at all, and we have it totally under control.
We think we have it very well under control. We pretty much shut it down.
A lot of people think that goes away in April with the heat.
We're in very good shape.
I think it's going to work out fine.
Very well under control in our country.
I think that's a problem that's going to go away.
Because of all we've done, the risk to the American people remains very low.
I mean, view this the same as the flu.
It's going to disappear. One day it's like a miracle. It will disappear.
We are working on cures and we're getting some very good results.
We only have 15 people and they're getting better.
Now the Democrats are politicizing the coronavirus. And this is their new hoax.
If you're healthy, probably go through a process and you'll be fine.
Democratic nominee Joe Biden was campaigning in the battleground state of Michigan today when he brought up what he called the despicable revelations in Woodward's book.
On the day that we hit 190,000 dead in the United States because of COVID-19, we just learned from the Washington Post columnist Bob Woodward that the president of the United States has admitted on tape in February he knew about COVID-19 that had passed through the air. He knew how deadly it was. It was much more deadly than the flu. He knew and purposely played it down. Worse, he lied to the American people. He knowingly and willingly lied about the threat it posed to the country for months. He had the information. He knew how dangerous it was. And while this deadly disease ripped through our nation, he failed to do his job on purpose. It was a life and death betrayal of the American people. Experts say that if he had acted just 1 week sooner, 36,000 people would have been saved. If he acted 2 weeks sooner, back in March, 54,000 lives would have been spared in March and April alone. You know, his failure has not only cost lives, it sent our economy in a tailspin. It cost millions more in American livelihoods. This is a recession created by Donald Trump's negligence, and he is unfit for this job as a consequence of it. How many schools aren't open right now? How many kids are starting a new school year the same way they ended the last one, at home? How many parents feel abandoned and overwhelmed? How many frontline workers are exhausted and pushed to their limits? And how many families are missing loved ones at their dinner table tonight because of his failures? It's beyond despicable.
Democratic nominee Joe Biden. Trump, for his part, gave a news conference today where he presented a list of 20 candidates for a slot in the United States Supreme Court if he's reelected. The list, joining a separate list, contains conservative GOP Senators Ted Cruz and Tom Cotton. The questions Trump fielded weren't about that, though. They were about his coronavirus response, and he reiterated his desire to not frighten Americans.
We don't want to instill panic. We don't want to jump up and down and start shouting that we have a problem that is a tremendous problem, scare everybody. And I'll tell you the other thing, we immediately started buying all over the world. We started buying masks and gowns and everything else, and we don't want to cause pricing to go up to a level that becomes almost unaffordable. So yeah, in that sense I agree with it. Yeah, please.
How do you reassure the American public going forward that they can trust what you're saying?
Well, I think that's really a big part of trust. We have to have leadership. We have to show leadership. And the last thing you want to do is create a panic in the country. This was a horrible thing. It was sent to us by China. Should not have happened. Should never have happened. This is a disgusting, terrible situation that was foisted upon us. And we have to show, we just don't want to use, the best word is panic. We don't want to have to show panic. We're not going to show panic. And that's exactly what I did. And I was very open, whether it's to Woodward or anybody else. It's just another political hit job. But whether it was Woodward or anybody else, you cannot show a sense of panic, or you're going to have
bigger problems than you ever had before.
Do you take responsibility at all for some of the 200,000 deaths that we've had?
So I think if we didn't do what we did, we would have had millions of people die. And leadership is all about confidence, and confidence is confidence in our country. And our people have been great. We've been put through a lot by China, by releasing this, by having this come here. We were put through a lot. They could have done something about it, and they chose not to.
President Trump. And meanwhile, windblown wildfires are raging across the Pacific Northwest. They destroyed hundreds of homes in Oregon overnight. The governor said on Wednesday morning, this could be the greatest loss of human life and property due to wildfires in our state history. The destructive blazes were burning in a large swath of Washington State and Oregon that rarely experiences such intense fire activity because of the Pacific Northwest's cool and wet climate. No fatalities from Oregon's fires have been confirmed by Wednesday afternoon, but the governor said some communities were substantially damaged, with hundreds of homes lost. Hundreds of thousands of Oregon residents have been warned they may have to flee to safety. And as activists question why Watergate media pundit Bob Woodward waited months to inform the public of Trump's admitted lies about the virus, activists were bringing a message to the media that they should start covering global climate change with the seriousness it deserves. On Monday, the NYPD arrested three people at a Manhattan climate change protest for climbing the Columbus Circle globe in front of a hotel branded by the Trump Organization. Protesters inside the latticework steel globe hung a sign that read, "Climate Justice Now." The protest was organized by Extinction Rebellion New York City, quote, "to grieve the earth, demand a system change, stand in solidarity with refused fascism in New York City, and defend democracy of Brazil, and march for the right to a just, sustainable future." Refused Fascism New York City was another group participating in the anti-Trump protest. A spokesperson for Extinction Rebellion, Matthew Kearney, tells WBAI the protests by the group were worldwide.
People knew what the scientists know, then they would be horrified, and then they would be outraged, and then they would demand action. By failing to cover the climate crisis comprehensively, the news media are holding back an entire movement, and they're holding back the action that humanity desperately needs, and it needs it quickly, not years from now, but right now.
Tell me about some of the things that are happening around the world.
In Sydney, Australia, at the offices of News Corporation, that's owned by Rupert Murdoch, the same fellow who owns Fox News and the Wall Street Journal and the New York Post and many other properties, and also Brisbane, so both places, a group of activists dumped a pile of literal bullshit to show Rupert Murdoch what they think of his climate coverage. It was about 4 feet high, the pile of bullshit. In Washington, D.C., a group of Extinction Rebellion activists staged a die-in in front of the CNN offices. That's where you lay down and pretend to be dead. And then they poured fake oil over the CNN logo. In the U.K., a group of activists barricaded themselves at the door in Cardiff. That's the capital of Wales. They barricaded themselves in front of the doors of the BBC offices while a percussion band played music. In Boston, at the studios of WHDH, a group of people this afternoon are going to be delivering a letter, plus an analysis of their, with numbers and statistics of their climate coverage, showing just how far short it comes of the reality.
And Fox News, you seem to be wasting your breath over there. I mean, aren't they sort of ideologically committed to the opposite of what you want to prove, whether you had the evidence or not?
And that's a shame. But I think that the viewers of Fox, you know, so who knows what goes on in the boardrooms of Fox News. Frankly, the viewers of Fox News, if they did manage to get real information, would see the situation differently. I know that there are science skeptics out there, and I know that there are conspiracy theorists out there. But aside from the real super right wingers who are going to find a conspiracy in everything, aside from those people, I think most people are receptive to real information if they can actually get it. Fox News has a lot of responsibility for, has a lot to answer for.
All right. Anything you'd like to add?
I'm glad to be on your program, and I noticed that you're listener supported, that you don't accept money from fossil fuel corporations. You don't have fossil fuel advertisers. I don't know if that's what has anything to do with you having me on or not, but I'm grateful for your time.
Matthew Kearney is a spokesperson for the activist group Extinction Rebellion. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. Nearly a week after a pro-Trump counter-protester drove into a crowd of Black Lives Matter marchers in Times Square, Mayor Bill de Blasio and the New York Police Department still aren't saying whether any crime was committed. The protesters were nonviolent and rallying for Daniel Prude, a black man killed by cops in Rochester, New York. The black sedan rushed through a group of people crossing 46th Street near 6th Avenue. Addressing the incident for the first time on Wednesday, the mayor said he had watched a video of the crash.
Obviously, it's painful to watch any situation like this where you see this kind of confrontation and people in danger. There's still an investigation going on, waiting to hear more back on it. So when I get fuller details, I'll be able to say more.
And Chief of Patrol Fausto Pichardo told 880 News the car was not owned by the NYPD.
This car is definitely, without a doubt, not an NYPD-owned police car. There was some chatter out there early on. We've been working through the night with it, and it's definitely not a car that belongs to the NYPD. So I want to make sure that we're very clear on that. Because sometimes information gets misconstrued up there. What I will tell you is there was a protest going on, peaceful protest. There was some interaction between some folks that were protesting and the occupants of this car that, again, is not an NYPD-owned car. We don't have any people that came up to us that are claiming injuries. We have a pretty good idea of who the car belongs to. But again, we're asking the public, we're asking any of the protesters that were out there, we're asking anyone with information to please contact us so we can move forward with the investigation.
And that's Fausto Pichardo. He's chief of patrol of the NYPD. Moments prior to the crash, NYPD officers helped the driver and several pro-Trump counter-protesters into the vehicle. One was in an American flag draped T-shirt. During a separate press conference on Wednesday, Police Commissioner Dermot Shea confirmed that Midtown North detectives interviewed the driver and multiple occupants of the vehicle on Friday. Shea says detectives were still examining the driver's, quote, perception and what they thought was happening. And New York State Governor Andrew Cuomo announced that the infection rate across New York City is under 1% for the 33rd day in a row. Regarding restaurants, he says while they pose a risk of infection spread, they're also a great economic loss when they don't operate. He said restaurants on September 30th could go to 25% capacity, indoor dining with certain restrictions.
Dining, the rules will be temperature checks for anyone who comes in at the door. One member of each party has to leave information, phone number, email, so that there's contact tracing information if there is an outbreak. One person from every party. No bar service. The bars will only be for service bars, for wait staff. They can make drinks. They can transfer them over the bar, but nobody will be sitting at the bar. Masks must be worn at all time, except when you're sitting at the table. All tables must be 6 feet apart. Restaurants will close at midnight. Strict adherence to the state guidance that has been promulgated. Restaurants will have the air filtration requirement, the enhanced air filtration requirement that is specified in the state guidance. There'll be limited air recirculation. We want air from the outside to provide additional ventilation. Outdoor dining can continue along with 25% of indoor dining. How do you do compliance? State will expand the SLA, State Police Task Force. New York City will provide ultimately 400 code enforcement inspectors to work with that task force.
And that's Governor Cuomo talking about indoor dining, which will begin at 25% capacity. There are 10,000 restaurants that will have to be checked for compliance to meet the challenge Cuomo is setting up New Yorkers as the watchdogs.
And the only way we'll be safe is if we work to protect each other. That has worked extraordinarily well. The Restaurant Association in New York State will run public service announcement asking New Yorkers to be part of the compliance of this 25% rule. New Yorkers, I'm asking to report violations of that 25% capacity. We call it New Yorkers Protecting New Yorkers. We'll have a special alert phone number, text number that will go to the task force. And we ask people, if you're in a restaurant and you see more than 25% in that restaurant and indoor dining, you text the violation, the information, to the task force. It will all be anonymous. It will help that task force, because then the task force can send an inspector to that specific restaurant. And again, you have a universe of about 10,000 beyond the bars that we're already monitoring. And we're asking New Yorkers to be part of the solution.
And that's Governor Cuomo. And finally, Donald Trump has been nominated for the prestigious Nobel Peace Prize. The president of the United States was put forward by the far-right Norwegian member of parliament, Christian Tybring Gjedde, who insists he is not a big Trump supporter, despite nominating him last year as well. He stated that the reason for nominating Trump is for his work in the UAE-Israel deal signed last month, which normalizes relations between the United Arab Emirates and the nation of Israel. Perhaps the most egregious Nobel Peace Prize winner, though, of all time, was American war planner Henry Kissinger. Among other things, Kissinger was the mastermind behind the attacks on Salvador Allende's Chile 50 years ago this week, attempting to make his economy scream. Also supporting and abetting the fascist coup that resulted in the end of democracy in the South American nation. Peter Kornbluh of the National Security Archive just released documents that show the U.S. involvement in pulling down the Allende government. He had this to say.
Years ago, Chileans elected by a narrow margin, but still elected a socialist president. It was the first free and democratic election of a socialist leader in Latin America, and in fact, in the world. It scared the shit out of Henry Kissinger and Richard Nixon on the radio. It scared the pants off of high-level U.S. Cold War policymakers who really feared the idea that a socialist leader could be elected freely. What was the United States going to object to if democratic forces around the world started to elect socialist leaders? And so for Chileans, it was an amazing step forward. For U.S. Cold War policymakers, Richard Nixon, Henry Kissinger, and others, it was an alarm bell that Latin America might move out of their control, and that successful Salvador Allende in Chile might create a phenomena of replication, not only in Latin America, but in Europe as well.
How did they respond?
They responded almost immediately with contingency plans to try and block Allende's inauguration. And then when that failed, by a whole set of operations to sabotage his ability to govern, destabilize Chile, and foster what the CIA called a coup climate that, quote, set the stage, unquote, as CIA documents put it, for the September 11th, 1973 coup d'etat led by Augusto Pinochet.
And in that coup, what happened?
Pinochet took over the country. Salvador Allende committed suicide instead of being taken prisoner by the Chilean military. Pinochet instituted one of the bloodiest, most infamous military dictatorships in Latin American history. His name became synonymous. The name Pinochet became synonymous with human rights atrocities, international terrorism, torture, disappearances, executions. Created an incredible movement in the United States of America to make human rights a top priority in U.S. foreign policy, and a real backlash when Seymour Hersh at the New York Times revealed that the CIA had been so deeply involved in covertly subverting Chilean democracy. So it really created a moment of appreciation for the American public about what their government was doing in their name but without their knowledge, and led to a pretty significant backlash, which unfortunately has been forgotten in this day and age.
How does this all relate to what's happening in today's politics?
Well, we once again have an imperial-minded president, if you will, who not only uses his bully pulpit for words, but thinks it's perfectly fine for the United States to have the might and right to control other countries around the world. You see his approach to Iran, you see his approach to Venezuela, to Cuba, and other countries that he doesn't like. That has gotten the United States in deep trouble in the past, and it will get us in deep trouble in the future. So the lessons of Chile and the sins of what we did there are still around to haunt us.
Peter Kornbluh is senior analyst at the National Security Archive. And that's some of the news for Wednesday, September 9th, 2020. The news was produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. From New York City, I'm Paul D'Arienzo for the WBAI News. Thanks for listening.